morning. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 9:03 a.m. on Monday, May 16th, 2022. Present today are Representative LeBon, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Johnson, myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This morning we will hear introductions to House Bill 31 on Daylight Savings Time and Senate Bill 72, Civics Education. We'll begin with House Bill 31, Observe Daylight Saving Time All Year, by Representative Ortiz. Representative, if you and your staff could put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Finance Committee. Thank you. For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz. I represent Southern Southeast Alaska, District 36.
For the record, I'm Abigail Sweetman, staff to Representative Ortiz.
Daylight's a good thing, members of the committee, and that's why I'm here before you today. I am carrying House Bill 31, which establishes daylight savings time on a year-round basis. Daylight savings time is observed between the second Sunday of March and the first Sunday of November, or the time we are currently in. For example, we would spring forward one last time under this bill, then never fall back if we were to transition fully to daylight savings time. And the East Coast did not. We would only be 3 hours behind during winter months and would have the usual four-hour time difference during the summer months. That's how this bill would work. There are many benefits to daylight savings time. Your packet includes four studies showing some of these benefits, and there's also a study in your packet showing public support to stop changing clocks and overall preference for daylight savings time over standard time. Moving to full daylight savings time requires action by the United States Congress. Congress will need to amend federal law to allow states to observe daylight savings time all year. Congress has proposed federal legislation to keep the entire U.S. on daylight savings time, which did pass in the Senate in March of this year. If enacted, it would supersede this bill, House Bill 31. Nationally, there is an initiative to change to full daylight savings time. So far, 19 states have enacted daylight savings time legislation, and additional 28 states are considering legislation this year. On the West Coast, California voters authorized the change pending legislation, and both Oregon and Washington passed legislation in 2019, similar to the bill before you. Year-round daylight savings time is also gaining traction in Canada. The Yukon began full daylight savings time on March 8, 2020. British Columbia passed legislation to implement year-round daylight savings time that is contingent on the U.S. West Coast also implementing it. Because of our close economic and geographic ties to the United States and the Canadian West Coast, Alaska can avoid being left in the dark. We wouldn't want to be left in the dark by passing HB 31. And with that, Madam Chair, I will open myself up to questions, or we can do whatever the pleasure is of you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Are there questions? Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for presenting your Let's Get More Daylight in the Day bill. I've heard some positive arguments for this. Could you tell me why there would be pushback, or what have you heard about why not to do this?
I think when we look at making this change on a statewide basis, obviously it would have differing impacts in different areas. For example, where I would think it might not be viewed as favorably, although we certainly haven't had that much input from that particular region, would be the far west, western part of the state of Alaska, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, those places. They already have a pretty late daylight in the morning as it is. So in the wintertime, for example, it doesn't get light there until like close to mid-morning. And they already extend their daylight past our daylight in the afternoon here in Southeast. When I say ours, I'm talking about here in Southeast. So if we were to adopt daylight savings time all year round, it would get light even later in the morning on, you know, in places like on Alaska, and that might be problematic for those folks. So I think it's a regional impact kind of thing more than any other. I certainly haven't heard a downside from my district on the proposal. They would be nervous if we would to stay on the same time, but we'd make it standard time all year round. That would make my district nervous because we would lose some of that important daylight in the summertime that's important to the tourist industry and things like that. So there has been some discussion nationally about, well, okay, let's save the health benefits of not changing, but let's just keep it on standard time all year rather than daylight savings time. That would not be supported in my area, I know that. But in any case, I guess that kind of answers your question, but go ahead and give me a follow-up.
As a follow-up, thank you, Madam Chair. So for Fairbanks, for the interior, this is putting more daylight later in the day would be the true statement.
Right.
That's the benefit. So then the cost would be a darker morning in the interior and a little bit more, and for the summertime, which I think the interior enjoys having that daylight. Well, we have a lot of daylight. Doesn't matter. It probably doesn't matter. But from a wintertime perspective, then, we are locking in a darker morning, but more daylight. I'll go to work in the dark and come home, a chance to come home with a little bit more daylight. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I know my district, from the folks that I've heard, and not a lot, but from the few that I have heard from, they don't like the going back and forth, and I haven't really looked too much into this, so it's interesting to see that we can pick one. We've got two options. It's not just we're going to, you know, stick to one thing. It's, are you going to stick to daylight savings time, or are you going to stick to standard time? And I get this wrong every time. Every year, I'm a night person, and I try to think, does this mean, you know, springing forward that I have to wake up earlier? Or does it mean I can sleep in, or what is it, you know? And so help me walk through that. From what I'm hearing, it sounds like going to daylight savings time would give us more time later in the day. And I think the trade-off means that, well, I guess if you're not going back and forth, though, then it's not really a situation where I'm having to wake up earlier. So I'm just kind of talking this through. The other thing that I think of when I think of this and trying to put it into perspective is, so if we normally would get off at 5 o'clock and I don't change my clock, then the world will go forward and say you've sprung forward. So instead of it being 5 o'clock when I would get off work, I now, you know, it's 6 o'clock. And the clock would say six. But if I don't change my clock, then I'm still on 5. The world is at 6 o'clock. And because you sprung forward, assuming that that's what we've done, is we've sprung forward. So say it just happened this Sunday, and it's 5 o'clock, and you sprung forward, so your watch now says 6 o'clock, but I didn't do it. Mine still says 5 o'clock. Then I suppose that means that I have, see, this is the conundrum I get in every time. Does this mean that I have now, if I don't do that, then that means that I could have been out enjoying the sun for that hour, I guess. I don't know. Help walk me through this.
So, believe me, it's over the years it's been confusing to me as well, Mr. Chairman. But here's the thing. Everything, if HB 31 would pass, and nationally the rest of the United States would go along with something like HB 31, our summertime that we're all used to having, the daylight when it is, and would stay the same. Everything would be the same as it is in the summertime. Okay? What would be different is in the wintertime, when we normally fall back an hour, okay? In the wintertime, we would now, as a nation, as a state, have more daylight in the afternoon. We still wouldn't have a lot here in Alaska, but we'd have more daylight in the afternoon, and the sun would rise later in the morning. That's basically the fundamental difference if we were to pass HB 31. So, summer times, exactly as they are now. Winter times, longer days in the afternoon, and less light, or the sun rises at a later hour than what we're currently used to.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. That's a nice, simple explanation, and I can appreciate that. I think, so the theme of what you're saying is, if we change, there is no going back and forth, so you don't have to think of that. What you really need to think about is how much sun is there at what point of time of the day. You're going to have more sun later in the day, and I like that.
In the wintertime.
In the wintertime, thanks. What about the summertime? I would think it would be the same.
Exactly as it is right now, it'll stay exactly the same.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So the best way for me to kind of understand it, in case I'm not understanding it correctly, please let me know. Half the year, you'd be southeast would be, or I guess all of Alaska, would be 1 hour off of Seattle. And half the year, you'd be on the same time?
If we were to do it unilaterally, that would be correct. However, part of the legislation that this requires, in order for this legislation to have an impact, or to actually have its full carrying through for it, we would not be able to just do this unilaterally. This would not be something that just Alaska would do, and nobody else would do. The stipulations of the bill are that this is dependent upon West Coast states like Washington, Oregon, and California at least acting in a similar way, and it would have to get federal approval from the congressional level, not from the White House, but from Congress. They would have to approve this change. Okay? However, as I said in my testimony, the Senate, the United States Senate, has already passed their version of the law, which would be to keep the nation on daylight savings time all year round. And so the relationship then to Seattle, which is what you asked about, doesn't change. We would just keep being an hour difference from Seattle.
And
follow
so,
up?
Follow up on that then. Even though your bill says it has to be done in accordance with another entity, it doesn't have to be, right? Isn't that the previous bill that we heard like 4 years ago? Other states like Arizona, I think they're on, I don't know what they're on exactly, but they don't observe daylight savings time, I don't think. I was just curious. Okay, well.
Right, under the stipulations of my bill. But yeah, if another person, Delaney Johnson got elected next year and you wanted to do something different.
I wanted to just give an observation from my district, and a few years ago we had a bill, I think Senator McKinnon had it, to stay on standard time year round, and I don't think that was tied to anything else besides the state of Alaska, but I thought it was a great idea, because I just think the change in the clocks is just an annoyance and cause a problem, but the state fair was very much against that because they said when it gets dark, people go home. And so if we were on standard time, felt like they would lose an hour of daylight during the summer, which was important to them. They felt like some of their highest revenue is in the, those long summer evenings. And so they had a problem with standard time, but they wouldn't have a problem.
And that would be true in my community as well. My community, when they heard about that bill, they were opposed to it, not because they liked the idea of not having to change, but they didn't like the idea of losing daylight in the summertime, which is what the
Yes, we do. Thank you, and let the record reflect at 9:17 a.m. we were joined by Representative Wohl. And my two cents on this is that the Sunday after we spring forward or fall back, kids are always either late or early to hockey practice.
It's true.
That's right.
There's always somebody. Representative Wohl.
Yeah, sorry I'm late. My clock was off by an hour.
I'm late.
And I guess I just read the document, but if I may, and I hope I don't retread ground that's already been tread, which I probably will. But this says if a federal law allows states to switch over to full-time daylight savings, then Alaska could do so. But it could be a patchwork. Some states do, some states don't, which I've always said all along, it's a great idea, but we all need to do it because, for example, I have family in the East Coast that's 4 hours apart. If it were 5 hours apart, it would be even, which it was when I first moved up here, it's even more inconvenient. If you're trying to do business on the East Coast with a five-hour time difference, that would be less convenient than 4 hours.
Representative Wohl, you did miss part of the conversation.
I'm not surprised.
Actually, if states like Alaska did switch to full daylight savings time on a year-round basis and the East Coast didn't, for some of the year, we would be 3 hour difference rather than 4 hour difference. We wouldn't go the other way. We would, so.
You get even closer.
I walked right into that one, I guess. I just wanted you to reiterate that great point.
All those wolves in Boston.
Yeah.
Representative LeBron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on a related topic, I recall first arriving in Alaska, we were at four time zones. Do folks remember that? Or Representative Wohl thinks it might have been five. It may have been, if you go out to the tip of the Aleutians. And I just seem to recall what chaos that created for the state. And early in my banking career, we were dealing with different time zones, running a statewide bank that had branches that had four different time zones. So I'm so glad we're under one time zone. And I'm supportive of this change to daylight savings time.
Thank you, Representative LeBron. And with that, we will move to the fiscal note. Oh, Representative Johnson.
I just wanted to ask one more question. We talked about the national, you know, have to have a national, tied to a national action. But is there any, I can see why it'd be slightly different, but is there a particular reason that you felt like it needed to be tied to that?
Through the chair. Representative Johnson, the bill doesn't require that the nation adopt daylight savings time on a 48-state basis. It just requires approval from the federal government for the West Coast. I say the West Coast because my bill is dependent on some states on the West Coast adopting this change as well. But it doesn't require that all the states do it. It just requires the approval of Alaska and Washington and Oregon to make this kind of change. They already have done approvals for certain states. Arizona, I think, is.
Yeah, Arizona.
Yeah. So then
would the net effect, if we pass this, not really have any effect until something changed? And then, I don't know, whatever, somewhere else. I mean, we'd change it. We'd do this, and then it would be kind of sitting there waiting for something else to happen.
I'm going to let my staff, Abby Sweetman, answer that question. I think I know the answer to the question, but I want to see what she says first.
Well, I guess we'll see what we say. For the record, this is Abigail Sweetman, staff director says. Yeah, so in March, the Senate passed a Daylight Protection Act, which would, you know, create some movement. I don't really think it's seeing much movement in the House, but we would need federal approval for this to be enacted. But we already have movement for legislation in Oregon, California, all the West Coast states that would be doing this with us. So.
So now, did that answer your question? It didn't necessarily,
yeah.
Did it? Repeat your question. I think I have the answer to it.
My question was, is the
believe limbo is the answer to your question, yes. But yeah.
It would certainly would not have, I'm sorry, through the chair, certainly would not have an immediate effect. It would require some degree of federal approval, congressional approval.
I'll just add to that. How did Arizona get away with doing it then?
I'm not sure. Maybe Arizona took the action when they did, and it got the federal approval. Maybe they were, you know, were able to, from the federal government, get the approval for them to take that particular action.
Okay. Representative Wolf.
Yeah, along the same lines, Hawaii also doesn't play by the same rules. I know friends in Hawaii, and I never know what the time difference is. I always have to ask, are you 1 hour or 2 hours today? I don't know. And that's not a great place for an isolated. I mean, you could say Hawaii is doing their own thing way out there, but they'd probably say that about us, too. So Arizona, Hawaii, I think there's parts of Indiana or Illinois. There's like some counties and some other states. You know, so there are some outliers, and I guess I wouldn't want Alaska to be an outlier, and it sounds like you don't either.
Yeah, and this will probably confuse things, but there was a while there where my community, one of the communities in my district, Metlakatla, didn't make the change as well. That was wild because we had to remember, okay, Metlakatla, where are they? But in any case, so there is the ability for individual areas of the United States to kind of go rogue, if you will. Despite this bill. So anyway.
Please don't give that option to Representative Wolf. Okay, with that, we will move to Mr. Andy Mills, the legislative liaison with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, to review the fiscal note. Looks like OMB component number 3195. Mr. Mills, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Andy Mills, legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Yes, the zero fiscal note for HB 31 just reflects that DOT with our public facilities would adjust the clocks and also facility systems such as security and lighting to conform with whatever the time standard would be that we would follow. And if there's any further questions, I'll attempt to answer them, but we'll leave it at that.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mills. I see no questions. Any further questions or comments? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm sorry if you already addressed this, but is the United States an outlier in the daylight savings world? Are we the only country that partakes in this activity?
To the chair, for the record, this is Abigail Sweetman. Yes, that is an American invention, so.
Thank you. And I believe, if I may, had some of its origins in the agricultural community, farming, and so on.
Great, thank you. And with that, I'm going to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 31 for as soon as possible. Thank you, Representative Ortiz.
Thank
we
you,
appreciate
Madam
you
Chair.
Presenting today.
Appreciate having the opportunity to present today. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. We'll take a brief at ease. Thank you. House Finance on the record at 9:32 a.m. Next, we'll discuss Senate Bill 204, Hunting Permit Tag Auctions Raffles by Senator Revac. Our committee last considered this bill on May 12th, and we amended the bill. Our CS is not back from legal yet. At this time, I'd move a conceptual amendment to rule Senate Bill 201, Internet Charitable Gaming, as amended by this committee on the 12th, into this bill, Senate Bill 204. Is there an objection?
Objection for purpose of explanation.
Thank you, Representative LeBlanc. This will match the CS currently in editing at legal, as both bills will need concurrence both on the Senate side. With the lateness of the session, it seemed faster to roll them together. Further discussion? Is your objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
Thank you. And with that, the conceptual amendment has passed. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 204, version 32-LS1391-W from committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 204 as amended is moved from committee. Thank you. Brief at ease. Finance on the record at 9:34 a.m. Next, we will take up Senate Bill 72, Secondary School Civics Education by Senator Stevens. Senator, welcome back to House Finance, and your staff, Tim Lampkin, is with you. If you could place yourself on the record and begin the presentation of Senate Bill 72.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gary Stevens, District P. It keeps changing on me, but it's P right now. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your hearing this bill. You know, I think we'd all agree that one of the important things about public education is to teach our young people to be citizens, to help them become citizens, to learn about what it means to be a citizen of this country. And we've seen a lot of problems in the last few years, a certain apathy that has taken place in our schools. Often we're focusing on math and science and reading and writing, which is all important, certainly. But that has been at the expense of liberal arts education, of things like government. And certainly other states are taking notice of this, and we see other states who begin to make adjustments, changing curriculum, exit exams and civics, observing flag etiquette, things like that, improving our community and involvement. And certainly, you know, one of the reasons we developed education in this country was to help. One of the main criteria was to create citizens, to have our students know what it means to be a citizen. This bill sets an exit exam on civics in place for graduating seniors. One thing I want to make absolutely clear, it's not a high-stakes exam. Students can take it repeatedly. I mean, that's the important part of education. If you take an exam, and you know, we require all of our immigrants to take this exam. You have to take the exam, 100-question exam, to become a citizen of the United States. And I just think we need to require all of our normal students to be able to pass an exam as well. So you don't have to pass it entirely. The Senate set it at 70%, a minimum passing grade of 70%, and realize that students can take it repeatedly. And, you know, I took the 100-question test. I missed two of them. And I taught U.S. history. But So there's a lot of issues in there that when you take it once, you learn from your mistakes, and the next time you take it, you get it right. So I have to say that a very important person to hear from is our Commissioner of Education, who's very supportive of this. Hope you have a chance to hear from him. And what he said today in talking on phone is that he said this is not a high-stakes exam. It's a high-stakes issue. It's really important to realize it's a high-stakes issue, but not a high-stakes exam. So anyway, you should know that Tim can go into this, but you should know that the House Education pretty much eviscerated the bill and said it's no longer required It's not a requirement. There's no requirement to pass it at a certain level. So I just encourage you to give it some thought and maybe think about putting it back in so that it is a requirement. It's not high stakes. Kids aren't going to get thrown out of school. But they do need to know something about what it means to be a citizen of the United States. And that's what this is all about, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Could you give us a couple examples of questions that might be on that exam?
Yeah, well, sure. One of the questions is are there three major areas of government, you know, the Supreme Court, the other courts, the legislature, and then the governor? That's on it. Tim, what any specifics? I mean, a lot of it's pretty simple and fundamental, but some of it's a little more complex, like arcane Supreme Court and how it works, and how many members are on the Supreme Court. That's a very basic question that we all know. And we deal with it all the time, and we know these things, but many of our citizens, many of our young people simply do not. I can remember when I was growing up, I could hardly wait to be of an age where you could vote. And honestly, when I was a kid, it was 21. You know, now it's not the case, but you had to be 21 years old to vote, and we've changed that. And even more important, that young kids in school understand what it means to be a citizen. Now, Tim, could you give a couple examples?
Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. So I have the test here in front of me. This is one example that was issued by the Civics Education Initiative many years ago. For example, how many amendments are there in the Constitution? If the president can no longer serve, who then becomes president? What is the name of the president currently? When or which is a right or freedom of the First Amendment? That's just a few. There's 40 some in this test. We've been giving this test to other legislators as we've gone through the process. And I invite the senator to do so once again.
Yeah, I'd certainly like to give it to you, and we would not take away your citizenship if you fail it. But it's a process in which you learn a lot of answers to the question. Can I tell you right now how many amendments there are? I'm not sure I really can, but. I figured that out.
Yeah, I see this in our packet. It would be interesting for us all to give it a go and see where we're at.
I'll risk it. I'm thinking 26, but I'm not sure.
I was thinking 25.
Representative Wool and then Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I have a couple questions. Which questions did you get wrong? Secondly, are there any other exit exams required of a graduating high school student? Is there any other test that they must take and must achieve a certain grade in order to graduate?
Yeah, there certainly are. Tim, can you go through that? There are a lot of tests kids have to take, and some are high stakes and some are not. You know, recently we did away with a high stakes exam that was causing a lot of problems. And one of the concerns we've had is that this adds stress to kids, education is stressful.
Tim Lampkin, staff Senator Stevens. So there was an exit exam on the books many years ago that was repealed. Currently, there is no exit exam per se in statute. There are, of course, as we're all accustomed to, students have to take a variety of courses and coursework and do final papers and final exams based on a teacher's and a school's requirements. In order to graduate, you have to pass those exams. But this would put it in statute to take an assessment in civics and to pass that with a previous version, rather, to pass that with 70%. The bill before you, version E, ECHO, that the assessment provision was stricken in the prior committee. And so the original bill would have a required assessment that's be taken as many times as you want and pass it with a minimum of 70%. This is also equivalent to currently what's required by the U.S. Immigration Services when folks want to become U.S. citizens. It's based on the same exam, and there's an 83% average of our folks coming in as immigrants passing that test. The latest research that I looked at some years ago, there are students out there, are student citizens, American-born, that are in the 3-4% passing rate of this same exam.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 9:43 a.m. With that, we're going to stand at recess to the call of the chair. Thank you. Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 2:18 p.m. on Monday, May 16th, 2022. Present today are Representative Carpenter, Representative LeBon, Co-Chair Foster, myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon, we'll pick up where we left off on Senate Bill 72, Civics Education, and then we will move on to consider HJR 1, Constitutional Amendment Permanent Fund, POMB, Earnings, and hear an introduction of House Bill 66 on elections. We started hearing an introduction of Senate Bill 72, Secondary School Civics Education this morning by Senator Stevens. And I see the Senator's staff, Tim Lampkin, is with us. Do you have any opening comments before public testimony? Seeing none, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 72. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online wishing to testify? Seeing none, I'm closing public testimony on Senate Bill 72. And it looks like we have one fiscal note from the Department of Education and Early Development, OMB component number 2796. And we have Deborah Riddle, the division's operations manager, online. If you could place yourself on the record and review the fiscal note and let the record reflect at 2:19 p.m., we're joined by Representatives Johnson and Ortiz. Ms. Riddle? Brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 2:24 p.m. Let the record reflect we've been joined by Representatives Wool, Rasmussen, and Josephson. And with that, we now have Deborah Riddle online, the Operations Manager at the Department of Education and Early Development. Ms. Riddle, if you could please place yourself on the record and review the fiscal note.
Hi, my name is Deborah Riddle. I'm with the Department of Education and Early Development. I'm the Division Operations Manager. So the fiscal note is covering there's going to need to be some regulation changes as far as reporting requirements, as well as some of the requirements for the civics education, and that's a one-time fee of $6,000. There's also funds on there in order to add the reporting requirements to our data collection system. And then there's also the grant section, which is which will cover having some educators create the civics education course that will be available to all districts. And I apologize, I just got on and I just found out, so I don't have everything right.
Great, thank you. Questions regarding the fiscal note? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Riddle. We appreciate you calling in today. Or is there further discussion? Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to make a motion to take committee substitute SB 72 finance as a working document.
Object for discussion? Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to take up committee substitute Senate Bill 72 finance work order number 32-LS 0478 / Delta, D as in Delta, as our working document. The version of this bill that came out of the House Education Committee was a significant departure from the sponsor's original intent of this bill. The House Education Committee substitute removed the provision that made taking and passing a civics exam a requirement for graduating from high school. The Senate Finance Committee substitute allowed a student to pass the assessment with a score of 70%, provided waivers for students with disabilities, and allowed a student to take the assessment as often as needed to receive a passing score. Learning and understanding civics and the systems of government used by Alaska Natives is important for Alaska students. An assessment to help ensure that students learn these lessons and that the educational tools we use are working. Without the assessment requirement, there's no way for the state to track civic education proficiency among students and inform policymakers if changes are warranted to state education policy. So with that, Madam Chair, I move to the above motion.
Thank you, and we'll take a brief at ease to distribute the document.